welcome to The Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm Jan McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice, and we are here broadcasting live in downtown Los Angeles at SkidRowStudios.com, and we're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we're here to talk about entrepreneurship, which is what all of my guests do. They're entrepreneurs, and we're here to share business tips and just kind of talk about what the life of an entrepreneur is like, and I'm super, super excited for our guest today. She is Jill Aiko Yee, and I'm sure I said that wrong, and you can correct me, but welcome.
No,
I'm so glad you're here, and I love what you just said. Why don't you say your name again the proper way?
Oh, my name is Jill Aiko Yee, and I wanted to include my entire name in my business because I feel like it's my identity. So Jill is American, Aiko is Japanese, and Yee is Chinese. So my parents are Chinese and Japanese.
Fabulous. So welcome. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And it's going to be a lot of fun. And for our listeners, if you want to call in and chat with us and ask questions or anything, the number is 1-800-893-9562, and we would love to hear from you. So anyway, listen, you're a clothing designer, and you've got this really rad, cool line of clothes, but how did that get started? Did you sketch as a child? Did you always know this is what you're going to do?
No, it was something I really, I think, struggled to find, because when I was younger, my parents had me in all kinds of extracurricular activities, none of which were really drawing related. So, I ended up working at a retail store in my early 20s and realized that I really liked working with clothing and that I liked working with people. So, after doing that for not very long, I decided to come back to school because I had dropped out several years before to go for fashion school. So I moved down to Los Angeles, and that's what started the journey.
From where?
At the time, I was working retail. I was living in San Francisco. So I was working in a small boutique up there called Workshop. And she had all sorts of small, independent lines of clothing. And I just loved how the woman that owned it, Susan, how she merchandised it and, you know, interacted with her clients. It was really inspiring for me.
So did you come down because you felt like the best school was in Los Angeles or the best opportunities were in Los Angeles? Or
I think I had always wanted to live in Los Angeles, and I had heard of Otis before, which is where I went to school. So I just thought that it was a good opportunity to come down here and do the program down here.
Yeah. So that's great. So I love it when someone has kind of that aha moment of, oh, you know what, I really like this, and how can I take this a step further, and just kind of being able to follow your passion and trusting yourself enough to kind of follow your passion and say, okay, I'll see where this goes. So so you went to school, and did you major in fashion design, or did you major in merchandise marketing or something else? Or?
Yeah, Otis has a really great fashion program. So it's fashion design, and you do your first year. It's I think you do all the basics, so it's kind of your foundational year. You learn how to draw, and then your sophomore year, you get into fashion, and that's when they put you at a separate campus, which is actually downtown, not far from where we are now in the CalMart. And then you do 3 years of that, and it was really tough for me. I think when I was in my early 20s, I really struggled. Like, I had gone to school at UC Santa Barbara for a year right out of high school, and then I had dropped out, and, you know, I kind of, like, searching around. And then when I went to Otis for art school, it was another kind of struggle. I was really unprepared. I didn't know anything about fashion at all, so it was a huge surprise. I was like, oh, my goodness, this is, you know, not what I thought it was going to be. It was tough, but it was a really big, great learning process, and I think I got a lot out of it.
Well, it's great, too, how, sometimes people don't realize that the jobs that they have, whether they're really big jobs or whether they're menial jobs or whatever they are, they really can contribute to the journey and the path that we take towards leading us ultimately to our goal. And just even giving you that sense of seeing how clothes were marketed and seeing how they kind of came together and being in the store and kind of looking at it from that viewpoint, that angle, might have given you a kind of a leg up a little bit, even if you weren't prepared exactly. So did you know how to draw? Did you know how to sew? Did you know any of those things? Was it scary?
Yeah, not really. It definitely was scary. It was intimidating because there were so many new skills that I was learning all at once. It was really overwhelming. But I do think that coming from a retail background where I was working with customers is what the true inspiration was. So I wanted to learn all those skills, but I always took with me that I wanted to be working with customers. And that's a really big part of my business now, because I don't do traditional wholesale the way that a lot of designers do, where I sell to clothing stores. I work primarily with my own customers in my own studio. So it's really been nice, I guess, having my own company, being able to set it up that way.
Now, do you come from a family of entrepreneurs?
Kind of. My dad is he's an emergency medicine doctor, but he came into the field, I think, within the first couple of years of it, and started a company where he provided all the doctors for emergency medicine to the hospitals that he worked at. So kind of, my dad would consider himself an entrepreneur.
Well, I love it that you just launched into something that you really didn't know anything about.
No, definitely.
And said, but I want this, and I'm going to figure out how to make it work for me. And a lot of people go to school, but that doesn't mean that they come out entrepreneurs. So even in the fashion design, you know, it quite often frequently takes a different turn. So I really admire your spunk and your spirit and your determination. And your risk-taking, which are all great qualities, you know, for an entrepreneur to, and some people say, well, if I had known what was all involved, I might not have gotten involved in that.
Yeah.
But it took a lot of courage and a lot of guts to say, I'm going to go for this. And something just, and actually, it sounds like you really trusted your intuition, too.
Yeah, that was all a learning process. I think it was really something where I had to learn how to trust myself, because I think that I like to go at a pace that feels very comfortable to me, that you know, where I feel like I can fully explore all the options that I have in front of me. So there was a lot of pressure that I was putting on myself, I think, to really grow at this rate that felt like, okay, in order to be successful, I have to be, you know, hitting these goals and doing this and that. And as I've gone, I've realized that, like, no, I really have to listen to what feels, you know, good at that time, that feels like there's some risk involved, but that, you know, you really feel like that's the right step to take. You have to kind of go at your own pace and do what feels right, because otherwise you're working outside of your bounds. And I think that a lot of things can happen that, you know, that aren't gonna be right for your business. So.
Well, that's really great wisdom to share, because a lot of people do get caught up in keeping up with the Joneses or doing what they think they're supposed to do, or, well, I'm supposed to grow at this rate. I mean, that's what the books say. That's what I've heard. What people are asking me. Well, how many stores are you in, and what are you doing? And
totally.
And all of those kind of things. And you start to feel that pressure, and then that starts to shape your business and moves farther away from your true goals and your true mission. And so I'm really impressed that you've learned that. And again, it takes tremendous confidence of self to say, excuse me, I'm going to trust what's right for me, and keeping that in alignment.
Yeah.
So when you finished school, did you automatically just go straight into launching your own line, or did you go to work for someone? Like, what was that journey? What was that path?
No, I knew, I think at the time I graduated, that I eventually did want to do my own company, but I felt so inexperienced when I graduated. So I was like, I need to have all these, you know, all these skills. So I wanted to work for other people and just get the feel of the industry and the flow of it, and the experience that I needed. So when I graduated, I got a job with a designer named Rosie Nichols, who now has a line called Clover Canyon. And it's right around the corner from where I went to school. So, and I felt really lucky, because I loved her work, and she's very creative. So I got to step right into design and learn all about it from her. And then after working there for 2 years, I went to work for a company called Ilya, which is also in downtown Los Angeles, and they're primarily leather companies. So I worked there for 3 years. So I worked for about 5 years before I started the company I have now.
And what gave you, what was that final moment where you said, I'm ready?
Oh, it was, that was a total surprise. I was working towards it. So in my off time away from my job, I was working on some designs and, had kind of put together a photo shoot and things like that. But I think that when I was working for Ilia, they had grown really quickly and then decided to restructure the company and they laid me off. So it was a total surprise. I left my job the morning that they let me know, like a couple hours later, and I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And my husband was like, actually, this is, this is the best gift. You really need to you need to take this opportunity and do what you want to do and just go with it. So yeah, it was a total surprise. I mean, I was kind of preparing or working towards doing something of my own, but not in the way that it happened. So yeah.
Well, that's really, I've heard that from so many entrepreneurs. It is really hard to make that decision like by October 1, I'm going to leave and I'm going to launch myself. Right. And yet it's like leaving the nest and there's, it's one thing if it just kind of organically grows and all of a sudden you wake up and you've got all the photographers outside your door, wanting to photograph your next shoot or whatever, but your debut, but it rarely happens that way. And so, that's sometimes the best thing is to have that that kind of kick in the pants where you've got to decide it's now or never, and you're ready. You just weren't ready confidently. Maybe might be the right word.
Yeah, that's so, definitely true. I would not have seized the opportunity, in that way at all. Because that's not. But I think I learned how to roll with the punches when that happened, and it was like, oh, this is what happens. You take advantage, and then you kind of learn how to tune into what your opportunities are and just kind of go with that. So yeah, it was a really surprising / I don't know, lucky start, I guess, because I wouldn't have done it that way. So
right. Well, you also got to observe firsthand too what happens when a company grows too fast and they lose sight of their mission and their goals and then what happens because they're not prepared and can't possibly live up to what it is that they were trying to do originally. So you had that, and that sounds great. So, but you've been working on things on your own. How did you come to decide? I mean, there's so many choices. How did you find your groove? How did you find your style? These are the kind of things that I want to design. So what's your inspiration? What's your muse?
I think maybe even, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it wasn't something I wanted to, stay with and live in the Midwest. But I think in some ways, looking back at what inspires me, I still do draw inspiration from that kind of, from my upbringing, because it's very humble. And I always want clothing to be comfortable, and I want it to be something that you can wear on a daily basis. And I want it to be something that has identity to it. But I think the primary thing that I want people to feel when they put on the clothing that I design is that, you can put it on and forget about it, because when you're dressing in the morning, you feel like it expresses something about you, but you're not confined by it. And it's something that you can wear and be active in. So I don't really identify necessarily with, like a red carpet dress or something like that. So I have to really kind of just do what feels true to myself. And that's just, everyday clothing that that you would put on. So there's definite inspiration in that. And I do think about designing for other women like myself, people who are creative and are out there trying to do their own. I feel like my generation and a lot of the people that I talk to, they're freelance, they do freelance, or they have their own companies. And their clothing needs to suit that kind of lifestyle where it's like lots of things are changing. They're not necessarily going to an office every day. And if they are, maybe they're working long hours after work. So the clothing all has to suit those needs.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. And your line is really wonderful. And the minute I met you, I was like, whoa, she's cute. Look at this outfit she's got on. What is your website, too? And our listeners can know that.
Oh, it's my name. So it's Jill Aiko Yee. And that's spelled JillAikoyee.com.
Perfect. Everybody can go and check that out. So so was there a lot to learn or working for these companies? Did you already have like, oh, I know where to get patterns made. I know where to go get fabric. I know where to go get this manufactured.
Oh, not at all. And I think that's why I wanted to work for other people, because fashion is very much a trade industry still. So, you know, the fabric vendors that you work with and the people that are sewing things, those are all things that they can't really teach you in school so much. You have to work in the industry and meet people. And I've been so surprised just in the 5 years that I worked for other employers, how many of those people that I worked with, I still go back to and ask questions.
Well, I think that's great and so important to kind of find that community that will support you mm-hmm. in terms of helping with resources or mentoring when necessary. And sometimes a lot of people just, sometimes it might be easy because it's fearful to go back and talk with them, you know, other people that know what you need to know. And so you just kind of go in circles trying to reinvent the wheel.
It's so true. And I have to say, one of the things that has helped me develop my company the way it is, and I think in some ways probably held me back, is that I think that I need to do everything myself. So when I, you know, when I was working for other people, I was like, I have to learn all these skills. I have to learn how to sew. I have to learn how to pattern make. I have to learn how to design and sketch. And I have to learn how to create a collection. And I was putting all that pressure on myself. And so when I did start my company, I did all my own patterns. I, you know, sourced all the fabric, did everything. And I think now that I've had my company for a couple of years, I'm coming to the realization I don't need to do all those things myself. But it was, you know, it was helpful in the way that I was able to really define the way that the clothing looked and have a hand in, like, the sewing and how it was assembled, all those things. So, yeah, it's a positive and negative to be like that. But I wanted to basically understand from the inside out everything that goes into a garment so that I could be producing, like, the best product, you know.
Well, also, I think that's great to know as many things about your company and how it works and what goes into it. Simply from the standpoint that when you're hiring, you understand the position that you're hiring for. Mm-hmm. We always want to hire people who are, and that's not always an easy thing to do, to hire people who are better than we are. at certain things, but recognizing what your talents are, and it sounds like you're really recognizing, well, this is what I'm really good at, this is what I want to concentrate mm-hmm. my efforts on. Somebody else could come in and make that pattern. Maybe that's not where my skills are best suited.
Definitely. So, yeah, definitely.
So that's great that you came to that realization. It looks like we had a call, but it didn't come in. So if, hello?
Hi.
Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, cool.
What's your name?
Yeah, I had a question for Jill.
Okay.
Sorry, my name is Eunice.
Oh, hi.
I'm also a creative professional in Los Angeles. I was just curious, where does Jill find most of her inspiration?
I think it's tough to say. I mean, definitely Los Angeles and all of the creative people around me are very inspiring, because I like to hear personal stories about what people are doing and be able to translate that into clothing. But I love art. I love painting, primarily watercolor, just kind of like the color mixing. So visually, textures, fabrics, and painting, things like that. But then also, it's always about like movement. I used to be a dancer myself, so I think movement and being around a creative community, all of those things work together. So it's a lot of, I think it's like a lot of experiences, I would say, rather than like, I don't always build mood boards, but I like to go out in the world and have experiences. So that kind of thing.
That's so cool.
Thanks
so
for calling.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
Cool. So then, like, you know, what's the process for translating those kinds of experiences into something that's so, you know, like visual and tactile?
Well, I suppose it would be kind of like gathering of experiences out in the world. And then fabric shopping is something that's really important to me and, you know, and every designer. So I think I probably gather those experiences, go out, see what's in the fabric world and the textures and the colors and the things that I'm seeing and touching, that helps it translate into the garments. Because once I have the fabric in front of me and I see how the fabric moves and I see how, you know, how it acts on the body, then it's kind of bringing all of those elements together. So
those are great questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
No problem.
Bye.
Bye.
So those were really great questions. I wanted to get back just for a moment, though, because you when you started your own business, you knew what it took. You knew what was involved in creating your patterns and in finding your fabrics and even creating your designs and everything. How much did you know about creating your own business? Like,
I think that's, that was one of the things. Oh, I'm sorry.
Like accounting, like incorporating or not, or hiring employees, or charging sales tax, or building a website, or any of those things.
I can say now, looking back at it, I knew zero. I mean, I think I told myself, it's going to come, you know, as you do the design, like those things will come naturally. You'll say, I have this innate business sense or something that I was telling myself to make it okay to start working. But as I've gone, I've just realized like, oh my goodness, I really don't, I don't have that business background. So that's been a learning process too, just like learning how to ask people about what I need to know or going online and looking it up. Really, it's constantly a learning process for me. So, yeah.
And do you work out of an office, a workroom, house?
I actually have a work studio. So, yeah, I have a studio where I design and I do all the whole design process. But then I also take shopping appointments there with private clientele. So people can come, make an appointment with me, see where I work, try on the clothing, buy the clothing. And that way I can get to know, you know, who's wearing it.
So how did you structure your company? You said you did it a little bit differently than the typical wholesale. So what was your motivation behind that, and how is your company structured? So if someone wants to buy from you, do they just go online? Is it custom? How does that work?
Well, I do design in the way that other designers do, which is I make a collection or I'll have ready to wear pieces. It's not necessarily custom made garments, but so I'll design things, and then I started doing craft fairs. So sometimes I'll take it out, you know, and that's a great way to meet other people I normally wouldn't. And then also I take shopping appointments in my studio. So I think when I was,
and what does that mean exactly? If I wanted to come look at your collection, instead of going to a store, I would come to your studio and see your collection?
Yeah, so if people come to my website, they can get a hold of me. My phone number is on there, my email, and they can just contact me and say, you know, I'm free this Thursday. Are you going to be there? And I'm there 6 days a week, so people can come in. I kind of just structure my schedule around when I have appointments and have people come down to my studio and try things on there. And that stemmed out of two things. I think working in retail, I really enjoyed that experience of being able to help people find something that they feel good in. So that was the number one thing. And then after working in fashion, I realized that there was just this big disconnect where we were designing and, you know, in a private studio where I wasn't talking to the people wearing the clothing. There was always like the merchandiser and the showroom, the salespeople and the buyers from the stores. There were all these intermediate people that that are between the designer and the person wearing the end product. So I wanted to cut that out, and I wanted to be in contact with the people, you know, with customers, so that I could hear what their feedback was and get to know them on a personal level too.
And I think that's so great. I mean, you really found a way to kind of combine both and be involved in all of it, but not be overwhelmed by all of it. And so, but I'm assuming that you, and obviously you've got your target customer, but they still come in all shapes and sizes.
Definitely.
So how do you handle that in terms of, do you go ahead and make up like 20 pieces that come in different sizes or 10 pieces, uh-huh. you know, like from zero to size 12 or how do you accommodate for that for each of the pieces that are in your collection?
So I do pre-produce certain size runs, you know, like extra small through large. And then a lot of times it's a very small amount. Maybe I'm doing like 3 or 5 or 7 of those. So my studio does work as a showroom also, and that people will come in, and if I don't have what's in their size, they can order it and I'll make it up the next week. Or if they have specific size needs that, you know, that I don't have in the line, I work with them to alter the pattern a little bit, make it longer, make it shorter, make it, you know, kind of more fitted in the waist, whatever is specific to them. I like to be able to provide something for everybody. So I think that's a really great benefit of doing what I do, is that I do have the typical sizing, but then I can accommodate everybody, you know, if that's not something that they fit. And that's what I really like about working directly with people.
And what made you decide to go this route rather than, and you produce this yourself, so obviously it's not going overseas. What made you decide to go this route versus you know, designing a collection and then trying to get it into one of the larger retailers or even some boutique stores?
I think there's a lot of elements to that decision. One of them is that I knew I wanted to make really special pieces that that weren't produced on a large scale. I like I want people to know that they're wearing something that is. There's only a couple of them out there, and it's a special piece. But, you know, I see the fashion industry changing a lot, because when I got out of school, I graduated in 2006, and then a couple years after that, there was a big downturn in the economy, and I could just see that there were a lot of changes happening in every industry, but a lot in manufacturing and the way that the wholesale business worked. And I really strongly feel that vertically integrated companies where, you know, like American Apparel or a lot of other, there's so many new new startup companies that do vertical integration. And I really believe that that's the best way to go these days. It's an efficient way to do it. And it allows for changes in getting things to market really quickly. So, I mean, I don't have plans to grow my company really large and have many, many stores, but I think that it's the way that the marketplace for fashion is going right now. So it's...
That makes sense. Makes total sense. So how do you get motivated? You have this work studio. Does it work best for you to get up every morning and have this regular schedule? I mean, there are many things that come into play when you're an entrepreneur. And one of the reasons you want to be an entrepreneur is not to be confined by someone else's dream and their schedule and their everything. So there you want a certain amount of flexibility that if you want to come in and do an interview like today, you can do that. If you want to schedule an appointment with someone when it works for you and it works for them, you have that flexibility as well. If you want to take a vacation, which we know entrepreneurs work harder than anybody, but when you want to take a vacation, you can take a vacation. So, but also even getting up and saying, especially if you're in the office by yourself, I don't know if you have employees.
No, I work primarily by myself.
So, I mean, that takes a special kind of diligence and I can't think of the right word, but you know what I'm talking about, like a regimen.
Yeah, it definitely does structure to your day.
How do you do that? How do you get motivated?
I think I do rely on a pretty regular schedule. Like I like to be in my studio 5 to 6 days a week because I think the regimen of doing it every day is really healthy. And in terms of working by myself, I do need to mix it up because I think, you know, when you're in a room by yourself working, it's not always, you know, the best stimulation and there's not much conversation going on. So I love to meet people outside of my office or have people, you know, come visit. Actually, a couple of my friends work with contractors in my building, so they'll stop by and say hi. And I try to get out and see other people's creative spaces because I think that's a really great inspiration also. So, I think being regular about it, you know, having pretty regular work hours, but then making sure to mix it up and have lunch with friends or other creative people and, you know, have people come in and shop with me, being able to mix up what's happening there. So I try and take, I think, a lot of meetings and appointments during the day to make sure that I'm having interaction. But I think the first 2 years that I had my company, I really put a lot of pressure on myself to just be in there every single day working. And that was a good habit to start building on. So, yeah, just working every day.
Yeah. Do you have a quote or something that kind of that inspires you?
I don't have any quotes off the top of my head, but I would have to say
I didn't give you pre-warning on that. I said it'd be like we're having a conversation, and we are, so it doesn't matter if you
know that. That's
it's okay if you don't have the answer.
I was gonna say one thing that keeps me really inspired though is conversations with my husband, because he's an entrepreneur also, and he's a really, I think that he has really great insight into how people work and how businesses work. So being able to come home, you know, on weekends or in the evening and just kind of talk to him about like where I see my company going and what other people are doing in the business place. It's always a great ongoing conversation that we have. So I rely on that definitely.
Do you feel, looking at your designs, they kind of seem timeless. It looks like we have, so I want to get back to that, but it looks like we have a caller on the line. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you guys today, or ladies today?
We're good. Thanks for calling.
Us guys and ladies are doing good. How are you? Do you have a question for Jill?
I do. I was wondering, my name is Stefan, by the way.
Hi.
Nice to
Welcome
meet you.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, Stefan.
Yay, exciting. I had a question. I was wondering, like, do you offer, like, any classes, or you do anything like that?
I don't teach any classes. I've definitely thought of it before because I have a couple of friends that do that. But I think because I do so many of the elements of my business myself, I haven't really ventured into teaching before. But it, you know, it's something that's crossed my mind. I think it's really great to be able to share skills with people because it seems like there's a lot of people out there that want to start their own businesses. So, yeah, not at this time, but it's always a great inspiration for me to see my friends that are teaching leather crafting classes. Like, I have a friend named Tony who does a monthly leather crafting class, and another friend, Joe, who teaches macrame. So, yeah, I don't do it myself, but I have definitely taken other people's classes and taken a lot of inspiration from that.
Oh, really cool. I really like your stuff.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah.
I would wear it, but I'm a man, so I cannot. I only can watch you wear it or other people wear it.
Well, I think that kind of begs the question, do you ever anticipate that you would expand your line into men and women's or children or things like that?
Yes, I would like to do that. And I've designed a couple of men's pieces, some pants and tops, and I've done a couple of home items like napkins and drapes and things like that are dip dyed. So I'm just kind of working slowly towards expanding. But it's something that happens more naturally for me rather than like, you know, launching my men's line a year from now. So yeah, I just want to kind of add the pieces slowly as, you know, as it goes.
Well, there awesome. You go, well, Stefan. You've got clothes coming up soon that you may be able to wear.
Oh, yeah. We got to get you into some of the men's T-shirts.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So I forgot where we were before Stefan called. I think I was asking about inspiration, but I don't remember now. But anyway, if I think about it, it'll come back to me. So let's do talk about excuse me, the lines that you're doing. So you're looking at expanding and just kind of playing around with.
Yeah,
that kind
I like
of thing.
To. Play around with things because design, I think once you get into any area of design, whether it's graphic design or fashion or anything like that, you start to just experiment with, other elements of it. And I would love to do men's clothing because I kind of feel like men need to be comfortable and wear fashionable pieces too. And so the men's clothing that I have done has been a collaboration with my husband. He's really kind of asked me for things that he doesn't see out there, and he's a little bit off the wall with the things that he likes. But a lot of people have really liked those pieces. So we've done like a pair of men's harem pants, and we did like a really long men's t-shirt. I feel like the men's pieces I've done are, they're kind of playful and fun. And then I've done a couple of home items, like the napkins and dip dye, because a really big part of my line is dip-dyed, hand-dyed pieces, and so I feel like it translates really well into home things.
Well, I think one of the things I was wondering about, do you feel the need to, your line is kind of timeless. I think that was a direction I was going. Your line is kind of timeless to me from looking at it. But on the other hand, do you feel like, oh, wow, just maybe in school programming or whatever, where you think, oh, it's a new season and I've got to come out with a new line. Now, I know if you were in stores and things like that, you might feel that kind of pressure, mm-hmm. especially. But being on your own, do you feel that pressure, or do you, where you need to create a new line every season or something along those lines?
That was one of the really big other elements that made me want to do something that was non-traditional in fashion, because I really felt that there is so much pressure on, you know, every level of design, whether it's couture, runway, ready-to-wear, fast fashion. Everybody's trying to keep up and do 12 deliveries a year, 10 deliveries a year, you know, like an entire collection every single month. And I really feel that contributes to so much waste and just a consumerism that it doesn't really mean much about the objects that you're buying. So I wanted to do something where, I was just designing as I saw it necessary and as there was a demand for it. And it's kind of, it's a large part of my design, my line is that it's a uniform basically for creative women. So there are a couple of core pieces, and I do them in different fabrics, but the idea is that you can wear it on a daily basis and you'll come back to those items. So I don't design on a seasonal schedule so much as, I'll do a couple of new pieces every month and release them, and they're all limited edition. But I want them to be meaningful, and I want the people that have them to have an experience and a meaning associated with those pieces. So I try not to get too much into the seasonal design and the constant push to produce product.
I think that's great, because a lot of stores do it just so that to kind of drive their sales. But that doesn't mean that a lot of times you'll go back and you'll, oh, I wish I could still go and buy that t-shirt or that skirt or that dress. I love that dress. It's my favorite dress. And now
it's so true, because I think as somebody who buys clothing also, like, you want to feel like there's something to strive for. And, you know, if you fall in love with something, but you don't really need it right now in your closet, or you need to wait a little bit to buy it for some reason, I like the idea that it will be there for you, and, you know, it's something that you can look forward to rather than like, oh, and now it's on sale for 75% off, because that's how seasons work in fashion. So.
Right, and also I don't want to buy something and I'm just assuming that most people are really this way. You really don't want to go out and spend the money to buy something that you know is going to be out of style.
Definitely.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah, Definitely.
Yeah. Do you have a proudest moment?
Let me think. I think it's probably more of a cumulative feeling for me that I've gotten really recently, I'd have to say. For the first couple of years that I was working, I had a lot of fear driving me, and I just was feeling like, oh, what if this doesn't work? You know, I have this idea, but it really isn't the typical way to run a fashion company, and so I'm gonna keep going. But I had a constant sense of anxiety behind it because I didn't trust that it was gonna work. And I think more recently, definitely in the last, you know, 6 months, it's pretty recent that I feel like, oh, you know, I've really built the foundation for this and it's working, and I have repeat customers, people that really love what I'm doing, and it's also giving me a really large sense of satisfaction because I'm making things that I love and people enjoy it. So it's more cumulative feeling of like, I've built my life and my career in a way that that I really am happy with on a daily basis, and I think that that's, you know, the biggest gift that you can work towards and give yourself and enjoy. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, very, very important. And it can be very fearful when you're out there by yourself. So I love that you have that support of your husband and doing the things that you mentioned about having friends come by and having, you know, doing the appointments and seeing the, just seeing the progress, you know, that you're making.
Yeah.
And having people there to cheer you on. Were there people when you first started, when you even, it sounds like your husband was very supportive, going, yeah, this is a great gift for you. Yeah. Hey, you can finally do what you're so talented at. But were there others going, because a lot of times we are driven by fear, going, oh no, wait a minute, Jill, I don't know if this, maybe you should go and work for somebody or.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, and I think it's, my parents were really worried, you know, friends, it's a natural concern because you want to see somebody that you care about do something that's secure and, you know, where they're not taking on something that's going to lead to, you know, failure down the line or just insecurity. So yeah, I had to tune out a lot of that and really just laser focus. Like I said, I would just go into my studio every single day and work. And I think tuning out the detractors and the people that, you know, might just kind of put those worries on the table, had to, you know, steer clear of it and just try and be positive and work really hard. So yeah, it's difficult when, you know, everybody's got a reason to tell you why it's safer not to do it.
Right. Was there a really, what was, if you can remember, kind of, and maybe it happened yesterday, maybe it happened in the first year, but what is the hardest lesson that you've learned as an entrepreneur?
I think it's probably to not take on more than I feel comfortable with, because there's always that pull where you do want to grow and you want to make sure that you're moving forward, but you don't want to overcommit yourself to I think it's overcommit yourself to taking on things that you don't really feel passionate about, because you can't always put that true energy into it that it takes to make something grow. So yeah, that's been a really tough lesson to me, but I think it's helped me get to know myself better and know what I can take on and know what I want to put my energy into.
Well, those are very, very wise words, I think. Do you have a dream collaborator?
Gosh, you know, I have been doing a lot of collaborations this year and recently, so I'm really happy with who I'm working with now. And I think as the opportunities present themselves, I'm always thinking to myself, "Wow, this is getting better and better." So, I don't have a person off the top of my head. I'm working. I've worked with a small American-made clothing store this summer and fall to do a collaboration. We did two capsule collections for Orn Hansen, which is a store in Portland. And I'm working on a collaboration that's at the very beginning right now with a friend, Jessica Commingore, who's a graphic designer and blogger. So I'll be doing that this fall. And I love working with other people. It's really a great way to expand what I feel comfortable with and get to know somebody else's aesthetic. And I think really just do things I couldn't do by myself. So, yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool. That sounds really great.
I'm really excited for it.
And it sounds like it also takes your business in a different direction than not taking away from what you're doing, but just expanding it and expanding your talents and expanding your reach in a different way, uh-huh. being able to give exposure to others through them, but capitalizing on what it is that you do.
Yeah, it really is a great way to grow because I feel like being involved in other people's processes and the way that they think and work and their products have given me opportunity to do a lot of things I wouldn't have thought of on my own or, you know, just being able to work with other people. So.
And how does something like that come about for like entrepreneurs out there listening? How do you find the people that you want to collaborate with, or how do you even kind of come up with those ideas or structure that?
I'm a big believer in things coming about naturally because I think that they'll fall into place. So my first collaboration that I did with was with a friend named Graham Keegan, and it's something we're still doing. He's a natural, he uses natural dyes, indigo dyes, things like that. And he had seen my clothing and mentioned a collaboration, but it was probably a year before we actually started working on something together. So I think it's a matter of aesthetics working together and then being able to work it into your schedule. There's a lot of levels that it has to work on. So you were asking how it came about.
Yeah, how those things come about. You know, so
I think just being in communication with the people, it'll come up naturally, generally, and if it's going to work out. Because a lot of times I think I've talked to people and we've been like, yeah, we should work together, you know, and for some reason or other, it eventually won't work out. And it maybe because we're growing in different directions or they have different goals. So it has to be something that happens naturally, I think.
Yeah. No. And I think just even putting yourself out there and also, it sounds like you really see opportunities. And I don't know if that's something that you can train someone to do, but just keeping your eyes open and looking at it, like going, oh, wait a minute, he does dyes. Oh, wait a minute, maybe I could, what if I dip my fabrics in that? Yeah. And what would that look like? And just experimenting. It sounds like
yeah,
you're very
just experimenting.
Open to experimentation. And certainly that's part of the creative process, but not being so laser focused on your vision, but mm-hmm. being open to your vision.
I do try and be flexible. I think as I go, I realize more and more how much I learn from others and how much we can both benefit by working together. I really love the idea of collaboration. So, I guess just being open to opportunity and talking to people about it. And I really do like to talk to other creative people about what their process is, how they work, what they see happening, you know, in the future for their company, because it can help me come up with ideas for myself and then see opportunity for us to work together, definitely.
And where do you see yourself going? We talked a little bit about the fact that you may expand your line to mm-hmm. include men, home goods, maybe eventually
maybe
children.
Who knows?
You never know. Are there other things on the horizon? You mentioned that you love painting, you love dance. I know from looking at your website, you name some of your collections after music and, uh-huh. and things like that. Do you have a business plan or do you have ideas about where it is that you want to take this, say, in 5 years?
I think that's something that's ever changing. I'm definitely always working towards growing and I want to work more and more on the creative end as I go. So I think being able to develop the company in a way that frees up my time for the creative process. But I really enjoy working by appointment and working in my studio. So I suppose a couple of years from now, maybe I'll have a bigger studio and I'll be able to accommodate more appointments. And maybe I'll be able to do more custom items. But I'm really happy with the trajectory of the business. And I'd just like to, you know, be able to meet more people and, you know, I think be exposed to more people. So that's what I'm working towards.
Is there a way that you measure success? Like, specifically, like when I sell this many units, or is it just more of an intuitive feeling? Like, I feel like I'm in the right place, doing the right thing, doing what's important to me. What is your, how do you measure that?
No, like you said, it is kind of an intuitive thing, because I feel like if I'm able to live in a way where I'm being creative, I'm helping other people, I'm working with other people, that and I draw a sense of happiness from it, then I feel like I'm successful, which I know is really intangible in a way. And it's definitely about selling things too. I want the clothing to be in people's closets, and I want people to enjoy wearing it. So that's a sense of success also. But it's not so much about how much I sell and how much I sell and how many people have it. It's more that I'm able to help people, and that, you know, we have great interactions together, and they enjoy coming to see me, and you know, we can share part of our lives or part of our day together. So,
well, it's all, you know, what this really touches on, and I think it's really important, is it's great that you have been able to know what's important to you, and there are different kinds of success, and you're in alignment with this. And what I'm thinking is, like, for people who have had to take on investors, mm-hmm. there's a certain accountability yes. that you have to have yeah. with them, mm-hmm. and that might not feel so good. I mean, it's one thing to be able to go and do your dream, but then whenever you've got investors going, well, how many units did right. you sell this month, and yeah. and we need you to put out a new line, and now all of a sudden it feels like it's someone else's business rather than yours. And yes, you might be able to grow bigger, you might be able to uh-huh. do more, but if that's not how you measure success, then that's not really going to ultimately be successful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think just reflecting on the conversation we've just had, I feel like I'm not really your typical business person, and that I'm trying to grow really quickly, but yeah, because I kind of feel like business can mean successful interactions with people. It's not always measured in how fast you're growing. And I feel really lucky that I haven't had to take on investment, because I have seen the struggles that comes with. And I know that you can, you know, have a lot of success really quickly when you do take on investment, but it's not something that I wanted to do for myself. It just... it could happen in the future, maybe, but I think I really wanted to lay a strong groundwork for the company and do it in a way that felt right to me. So, didn't look for investment to start
with. Well, I do think the face of entrepreneurship is changing in terms of people being more in tune and more in touch with what they want. And mm-hmm. and yes, there's some moments in time, and crowdfunding is big, and right. taking on angel investors, those are yeah. big, and certain companies and certain industries absolutely require that. There's no way that could actually launch and be successful without that. So I'm not minimizing that in any form or fashion, but on the other uh-huh. hand, I want to really recognize the importance of knowing when there are times that you can do it yourself mm-hmm. and keep it your own and not lose sight of what it is that you're doing. So I love that we've address both sides of the coin, or entrepreneurship, if you will.
I think it's really a personal choice. I mean, it's a choice that you have to make when you start your company. And like you said, it's not right or wrong either way. It's just what is right for you and what's right for your company and your product. So, yeah.
Well, on that note and those words, I think they're great for people to take with them. And our show is over, and I just want to say thank you so much for being a part of the show and sharing your wisdom and your experiences and your journey with us and your life as an entrepreneur.
Thanks for inviting me, Jan. I've had a great time talking to you. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.